And in 3, 2, 1. Hello and welcome to another episode of Guide to the Grind. My name is Jeff Eady. Joining me, as always, is one of Canada's favorite mortgage brokers, one of my best friends, and the Rogers to my Hammerstein, Mr. Jonathan Tilger. Jonathan, how are you today?
I am phenomenal, but as I was looking at the intro card you got, I think you got to update that picture. You've changed the facial hair, so you got to make the change on that.
This is true. There is good reason for it. Before we continue any further, I just want to anybody who's listening, watching, however you consume this media, please do us a favor, like, comment, subscribe. All of those things help us get the message out there. And we love bringing big ideas to the average investor. Today is no exception to that. We have a fantastic guest coming in all the way from Indiana. And if my computer would go, I'd get right to his intro, but I'm getting the spinning beach ball of death because you got to love older Macs. It's almost time to upgrade. Hang on, I'll get to him. I promise. He is the founder and CEO of Bow Digital, a digital marketing agency based out of Indianapolis, a dynamic force in the world of marketing and communications, a thriving marketing agency with a vast client base across the United States. His expertise in website creation, email marketing, social media, and design has propelled countless small businesses to new heights. In the marketing space, his passion for storytelling and public his passion is storytelling and public relations. Finding businesses with unique but difficult story to tell is a challenge he welcomes with open arms. He believes that the key to success in social marketing these days is to create relatable content by combining pop culture with average Joe occurrences. He and his team have become experts in identifying opportunities and trends to create the most useful content possible. Please welcome to the show, President and CEO of Bow Digital, Mr. Wayne Stanley. Wayne, how are you today?
I'm great. Thanks for having me, guys. This is perfect.
I actually got through that without absolutely murdering your intro. I'm pretty happy. And for the first part, I was ad-libbing it because my computer wasn't working. I just had to go into it.
Great memory. It was great.
Yeah, thanks. So, Wayne, welcome to the show. We're super excited. I love to nerd out on marketing. It's one of the most overlooked aspects of businesses. And quite frankly, it's one of the most unknown, I guess, like mystical. Like people just don't understand marketing. You see, posters here and guerrilla marketing there, and right down to the business card stuck on the bulletin board at the local supermarket. Can you explain a little bit about what your company does and how you tell a story? Because that's what most people don't understand about marketing.
Yeah, I agree. It's I'll say it's job security for me that most people don't think about it or don't understand it or want to understand it. Because truly, I mean, a lot of the mechanics of marketing, I say all the time, even to our existing customers, I'm like, it's not necessarily difficult, but a lot of people don't have the skill set or don't want to take the time for it or invest the money. And so that's where we come in. And I try not to use the term full service these days. I keep saying we're more of a modern marketing agency, where we combine a lot of the more traditional marketing with graphic design, flyers, handouts, collateral, logos, all of that kind of stuff with a lot of training. We do a lot of on-site training for our customers, for other folks to be able to do what they need to do. There are so many that come in contact with us that say we have a marketing department, but they're not good at coming up with ideas. Can you give them the roadmap and they'll just follow it? So we do a lot of that kind of marketing planning for others to execute, and then everything on the digital side from websites and social media to video, blogs, email marketing. I think the only thing we don't really do that people have asked about in the past is I've been asked if we could create some sort of virtual reality assistant for somebody that's more of like a hologram in their front office. We don't do that kind of development work, but just about everything else in that space.
And how did you get into this?
I went to school for advertising and public relations in college, and was head first into the public relations side of things, working on Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C. after college for several years. And then from there, really sharpened a lot of the more marketing skills at a real estate trade association in DC, and then eventually started this place. And it's one of those for me that as I've gotten older, I've realized that for some people, things just come more naturally, and the ideation side of things and trying to think about things really differently has is something that I enjoy and does come easier for me than others. And so I've been able to try to find those experiences throughout my career here.
Who okay, let's say I've got a small business. Well, actually, let's start with the basics. What size of business? What types of business do you work with?
Well, that's one of the things that I'm most proud of for our agency is we really do work with everybody. We've got one man super small businesses out in the rural Midwest of the US that we work with, and maybe they're doing, maybe their budget allows for them to do one video a quarter. And then we've also got a couple of Fortune 200 companies that we work with. So we don't necessarily have a floor or a ceiling for what we do. And I think that it's different than a lot of agencies. For us, it allows us, by having those larger base clients, we're able to have tools and services for our small guys that we might not have otherwise. And then vice versa, having those small guys, I think, teaches us to listen differently. And the way that we interact and behave with our partners, which is what we call our customers, I think changes. And I think that it means a lot more to the big guys because we have a different approach in how we interact with them. And so there's not, we really do customize not only our actual deliverables for our customers, but the types of services, what they want in their contracts, all of that kind of stuff is really unique to them. Because my whole thing when I started Bow Digital was that I just didn't feel like, even back in 2017, I just didn't feel like marketing had to be such a stretch for people. I wanted it to be more approachable for any business.
So let's go through. I think where Jeff was starting to get with that was, let's say we had a business come to you. So let's say we've got an actual business come to you. They're a mortgage business based out of, let's say, Toronto, Canada.
Nice, Jonathan. Very subtle.
might as well get some value out of this for sure for us. I mean, why not? So I come to you and I'm just, you know what? I'm looking to, I'll just say, diversify, have existing streams, obviously, that we get business through. A lot of that has been built through, I'll just say, picking up the phone and calling people, for instance, building relationship with realtors, but looking to say, how can we expand? How can we expand our reach getting into other markets? What's your process you would start us off with?
Now, this is turning into a pitch podcast, not just
Yeah, let's do it.
but I think that my thing this year is I've really tried to, I think a lot of people would say, like, let's cast a wide net. We want to go after as many people as possible. This year we've tried a slightly different approach, and we just finished meetings with every single one of our customers on this, but it was to really think about, we asked them three main questions, and we said, and this is, we've got a lot in your space, so this is perfect for you. But we said, who are the 10 customers that you would like to get more deals from this year? Who are the 10 customers that you, if you got one deal from them, it would change the game for you this year? And who are the five customers that you would never want to lose business from? And then we're going to focus all of our energy, dollars, and everything else on those groups. We're going to stay consistent on everything else so that you're still in front of folks, that we're doing the things that we need to do for lead generation and all of that. But how do we more specifically meet the needs of those individual groups? Because, like you said, some of yours may be real estate agents, for example. So, in that list of 10, that if they gave you one deal this year, what does that look like? What do they really need? And for some, we all know real estate agents are a whole different animal, and they all need very different things. So that mindset allows us to sort of erase the traditional deliverables of, well, we said we were going to do two marketing emails a week, and we're going to do this many social posts a month, and all that kind of stuff, into, okay, well, these guys really care about, or they really need help with marketing themselves. They need the education, individual workshops, recycling previous content to make it look like you've developed a newsletter for ABC Realty team. You're not doing anything different necessarily, but it looks like your mortgage company is catering what you're doing to that particular group. Like, oh, they really get me. They care about me. And that's kind of our process this year, is to figure out, I think my line has been, what does success look like, and how do we know that that's what it looks like? And being able to really try to thread that needle more specifically is so far really helping.
Well,
Why the shift this year?
Everything is shifting. And so there's no, I mean, that's been the case for marketing for forever, basically. But social went unchanged for a long time, in my opinion. In the last few years, it's changed a lot, both on the back end and the user experience side. And so that's a whole different animal. Everything that's happening with the Facebook, Apple, Google wars has changed how we do paid advertising and with cookies and all that kind of stuff. SEO continues to change and evolve. I mean, even Google changing the game on how email marketing is going to work, and this month is something that is disrupting a lot of folks. And so, with all of that kind of churning around, it's instead of relying on the same sorts of deliverables for us, we still use all of those tools, but we're just trying to be a lot smarter in how do we do this? Because we were lucky in marketing for a long time that, especially with the different data points and all of that, that if we wanted to do ads or find people in very specific demographics, if I wanted to find women over 60 that like the Cubs, that live in Pennsylvania, that have cats and have a minivan, I could target them with an ad that matched exactly who they are. And that's much harder today. And then you could, that's a whole other podcast on the good, bad, and ugly of consumer privacy laws and what's happening with cookies and all of that stuff. But because of those changes, we really feel like, owning your own list and your own universe is what's most important, and being smart with that. And so if you're trying to grow out of state, if you're trying to grow national, if you're trying to go from a one county or territory operation to more, that strategy may look a little different. But if you're talking about immediate growth, that list that I was talking about is where we're seeing some good results there.
So you're talking email marketing?
Email marketing, LinkedIn is still definitely super beneficial to a lot of our folks. Everything that's happening on LinkedIn in terms of really exercising what they've always wanted to be in terms of thought leadership and creating networks of people and having people do continuing education and things like that through the platform. There's still a hiring, and staffing giant, but it's grown into such a more engaging platform that it's more expensive to do advertising there for sure. And it takes a lot more time to find success. But once you do, if you stay consistent with what you're doing on there, we've seen big gains there. So yeah, the two for us right now would probably be LinkedIn and email marketing.
So, just kind of okay. I'm gonna nerd out for a second. Do you follow Dan Kennedy at all?
I know him. I wouldn't say I follow him.
Okay. Well, one of the things that Dan Kennedy talks about is that a sealed envelope is the last bastion of free speech in advertising. How do you feel about that?
Oh, I mean, I would probably agree. I mean, all of that, what happened with data privacy in Europe and then California and everything like that. I mean, there's a Supreme Court case, right now for what these companies are doing with free speech in terms of limiting what posts are being seen based on the topic of content. And I think that there are a lot of big changes headed our way based on all of that stuff that it's hard to see the future. So we're trying to plan the best that we can, but I think that it's a bear right now to try to wrap your arms around, and especially for a lot of the small businesses that we work with that aren't the super large guys. It's hard to understand and figure out, what's our best path forward when we're hearing all kinds of different things. But I think in general we're going to see the free speech side of it be a hot button issue for the next several years, because even with whatever happens with this current Supreme Court case in the United States, it's not going away anytime soon.
It really, to me, it's fascinating how much the industry has changed. But I mean, I guess we're kind of getting away from how to serve a business. But marketing itself is it's a pretty nuanced category of business. First of all, you have to get your name out there in order for people to know that you're in business. It's not enough to just hang your shingle outside your store anymore and hope that f customers find you. What's one of your best strategies for awareness for just a small business?
I think that they have to start with smarter differentiation of their business, especially if they have any sort of competitor or have to do any sort of education for what their product or service is. You have to figure out, some people, we say differentiation, and I'm like, give me the three ways that you're different from your competitors. And they'll say things like, well, our customer service is the best, and we're honest, and something else, hardworking. And I'm like, I don't know what that means. And these days, my example, let's go back to real estate. My example for real estate is, for the customer service side of things, Me as a consumer, I would want a real estate transaction that is as digital as possible, as efficient as possible, as transparent as possible. That's a five-star transaction for me. For somebody else that wants a more traditional, fully paper, explain the whole thing to me, the pomp and circumstance of it all, that's a one-star service for them. And so saying you have great customer service, one of us is going to be disappointed if we use you. And I think that's the case for a lot of businesses right now. And so that's a big one. And the whole honesty thing for me, this is a soapbox that I'll die on, but I'm like, if you have to lead with the fact that you're honest, if that's a differentiator for you, you should really look internally. I think most people think, inherently that you're honest unless you prove otherwise. And so we really challenge people to think differently and to say, what does that mean? When you say you've got great communication, do you mean that your customers love how you communicate, what you're communicating, when you communicate, where you communicate, who's doing the communication? I mean, really trying to probe deeper to figure out what does that really mean? So you're saying this word, but that doesn't mean anything to the average person. So how do we get them to care more about that? And we ask those questions not only of their customers, but also of their internal team, because a lot of times there's a miss and a match there where the internal team thinks that this is what their customers care about, and the customers think something else, and you're wasting your money if you haven't figured out a way to connect those. And so I think that differentiation is probably the biggest one for us, because everything else can grow and thrive from there if you've got the most efficient way to talk about yourself. It's not, I say all the time, it's not necessarily like recreating the wheel or coming up with some full new brand that's super costly and you have to educate people on, but it's more like, how do we change their perspective even 10 degrees? And if we do that, can they find success?
Well, just what you said. I mean, as far as differentiating, as well as I'll say specializing in something, finding, well, that's part of your differentiation. And going back to real estate, I always love the reference that I heard it over and over again at networking events. A realtor stands up and says, "I'm a realtor. I specialize in residential, commercial, leasing." Just reads a laundry list. So basically, what you've just said with that statement, you don't specialize. Got it. As opposed to, and that's probably one of the hardest things is, and you said earlier about casting a wide net, which has traditionally been what you want to do with, or what a lot of people think about marketing. But no, really, the more narrow, the more focused, the more getting into that one person, yeah, you're going to turn away 100 others, but you're going to talk to the one who is the true person, who's your customer. But that is a process. Can you help? I mean, I know you talked about sort of probe deeper, asking people to look deeper to find out how they really are different. Do you have like a series of questions, something you do to help them get to that point? Because I know it's tough to do, tough to find that out sometimes.
Yeah, I sort of talk about it as we call it our story arc process and how we build a story for someone. And those questions that we ask internally and externally are a little different, but I share it all the time because people still don't do it. So I'm like, I'm not losing anything by giving away the secret sauce here. But ultimately, I want to know from the customer side first, why do you continue to use this company? When we do our customer interviews, I think it's important. Number one, a lot of people do this stuff these days and they focus on like SurveyMonkey or online type surveys. To me, this is not an exercise where you can rely on that, because you need to hear the question, you need to hear the answer, you need to be able to ask follow-ups and dig deeper based on what people are saying. Otherwise, you're making too many. You're inferring too much on what they're saying, and that's not going to help you in the end. And so we want to know, we don't want the customers that, even if they have the worst experience with you ever, they're still going to come back and use you because they're already in love. They're in that side of the thing of the game, and they're going to come back regardless. We want the ones that you've had to work for, the ones that aren't afraid to be the squeaky wheel, that kind of thing, to see, okay, you've got an opinion, you've obviously got other options. Why do you work with this company? Why do you use this service? Why do you use this product? And then we don't let them give one-word answers. That's really important in the process. Again, back to, well, I love them because, in real estate, a lot of people follow the individual. Well, I just love Stacy. So wherever she goes, and I'm like, okay, but tell me more about Stacy. What does she do? What does she do specifically for you that matters or changes your business? We also ask about, we try not to get into what could be better. That list never goes away. That's really a job for your salespeople. Because ultimately, even the ones that say, oh, they're 5 stars, I love them so much, there's really nothing that they could change. If I really, really work on them, they'll say, oh, well, I would love it if they did this little thing. That list is always there. You can't let this type of conversation focus on what could be better. We want to know what sets people on fire for your brand, your product, your service, so that we can have more people feel that way. So there aren't necessarily a set of really specific questions, other than you can't let them give one word answers, and you have to get down to the nitty gritty of why exactly do you keep coming back here? Because you do have other options. Even if you're one of those businesses that think that there aren't other options out there, I guarantee you in 2024, there's probably another option for them out there. If you've got the one thing that's doesn't have another option, good for you. But even if you have that opinion, I think that people are surprised these days to find out that, oh, well, they found somebody online that's, in a whole other part of the world that can do this work, product, service for them. And so whether it's cost or whatever, they have figured out their differentiator. And so you have to think more clearly and work harder to do that.
I heard a strategy around this where, the Pareto distribution 80-20 rule, to go back to your 20% of your customers that are responsible for 80% of the revenue and ask them what they love about you. Ask them why they choose you. Should you spend your time with the other 80%?
I talk about this a lot too. It depends on whether you're in a growth versus maintenance mindset as a business, I think. And I think that you can be in both of those, but ultimately you're probably sitting the majority of what your business plan, your goals for the year are in one of those two. And I think a lot of people often find I think they assume that the growth mindset for your business is the harder one, but really it's the maintenance. And so if you're happy with the business that you have, you're not looking to necessarily grow in huge ways outside of your current territory, product base, customer base, that sort of thing, maintaining what you have is harder than ever for exactly the reasons I just mentioned. There are tons of other options out there for stuff. And so you've got to work hard. So, yes, if you're in that mindset, you should focus way more on the other 80% and continue going back to them to make sure that you don't lose them, because people are caught off guard all the time. And it surprises me because I'm like, even the largest of bit, how can you be caught off guard in 2024 with all the different ways that we can get metrics and communicate with people and all of that to have big swings in that customer base, especially if you're a service organization. But if you're on the growth mindset, then you may want to stay consistent and figure out how to put that 80% sort of in autopilot so that they're still getting communication. There's some form of check-in with those folks. They feel the love, but the majority of your activity, energy, budget, everything else is probably going somewhere else in that mindset.
Now, I find it fascinating. There's I guess kind of a beginning, middle, and end to looking at marketing within your company. There's a beginning, middle, and end to the stories that you develop. Let's kind of move on to that. How do you help create a story for a client and help them understand how to tell that story, which is just as important as creating it?
It's a fine line because for some of them, when we go in and do some of this stuff, I know that there are people that are sitting there that are like, this is just woo-woo marketing, weirdo jargon and activities and stuff like that. But for example, one of the things when we go and do an on-site that we do right away to begin with is we do an exercise where we bring everybody Play-Doh. And they have to use Play-Doh to, instead of a normal introduction to us where everybody goes around the room and says their title, their title could be what you actually do in your day-to-day is very different. Everybody could have the exact same title, and what they actually do is different. And so we challenge them to create something with the Play-Doh that explains why they get a paycheck from that company. Some people freak out and they think it's like an HR exercise, but I assure them it's not. And I'm like, this is
Everybody loves HR. What are you talking about?
exactly. I'm like, I just want to know better. Like, what do you see as your role in this company, the important piece of what you do? And for some of them, I'm like, you can create something more abstract, create a cube and talk your way around it. I don't care. But so we start out with that to one, get their hands off of their devices, to get their minds off of what they're already working on and that sort of thing. And then we go into some other exercises because most companies and most people aren't used to thinking about this kind of stuff. They're not used to thinking about marketing. They're not, they created, I hear this all the time. Well, we created a mission statement, and I'm like, when? And they say 1970. And I'm like, if that's still the foundation for what you do in your business, the mission statement is one thing. Your story has to evolve and adapt. Your story from 2019 is probably different than your story was in the middle of 2020 versus today. And so you were exactly right. The reason we call it a story is because it has a beginning, middle, and end. But for us, the end is not necessarily the last chapter, it's the current chapter. It's how you're preparing for the next. And so another thing that we do in a lot of those exercises to help them think about the story is we use a lot of, to get their minds in the right place, we use a lot of writing prompts. So if you've ever used a writing prompt book in school, whether it was elementary, high school, college, anything like that, we try to have fun with it. And you know, we might start with something like, if we were going to explain your culture in a fortune cookie, what would it say? And immediately it changes your mindset. Instead of whatever you've the three sentences you've always used as a company, you know, like, I've got one line to be a little witty and super short, and it's got to fit there. And they immediately, it kind of changes how they think about it. And we'll do things too, like, if we were going to explain your brand to a pirate, what would that look like? Or if we had to sell your brand as a Lego set, what would that look like? And a lot of them just stare, and they just sit there, and it takes a minute to sort of get into it. But even though we're never going to do those things public necessarily, it helps them think about it in a very different way, because you have to get them away from what's happening at their desk right now, but also everything that they've done in the past, to think about very clearly, where are you going to find success? What's going to make sense? And again, it's not, I try to use the word finding the most efficient message, the most efficient story, not necessarily the best or the most creative, because yes, there are lots of agencies that could come in and do whiz bang, you know, whatever else. That's a very old-timey phrase for me, but you know, they could figure out some sort of super creative thing for you. But if you have to spend double the amount of time for re-education, remarketing, and all of that, that's not necessarily going to work. But figuring out again how to shift somebody's perspective 10, 20% with a more efficient message based mostly on what you've done in the past, but being more clear with what you're doing, I think you find success faster.
You know, I think that's huge because what a lot of business owners are really good at is understanding their own business. What they're not good at is understanding their customer's perspective of that business. What is the curse of knowledge, I believe it's called. You know, Jonathan could tell you the ins and outs of pretty much any mortgage application, but it's not the same perception of somebody who's never bought a home and they're coming in looking at it doe-eyed and completely dumbfounded by half the things you say just because they don't know it. How do you help them combat confusion within their customers when they first discover a business?
Yeah, the confusion piece is big. And I think the other piece tied to what you just said is also, I talk a lot about the vanity side of marketing for a lot of small business owners, where it's hard to break away from, well, but this is my company and this is how I want to market it, when you're thinking about, well, but you have to figure out your consumer's perspective. And so I think for a lot of them on the education side of what we're doing, we talk about breaking it down as much as possible. For example, we work with a lot of title companies in the United States, real estate title companies. And I always ask, one of the first things I ask them is, do you know what the most Googled thing about a local title company is? And they all say price or what to bring to closing or any of that kind of stuff. And I'm like, no, it's parking. They only come to your title company. You know, in the United States, they're only, people buy houses roughly, the stats are roughly every 7 years, for example. So potentially it's only every 7 years that they're going to come to your office. And if they, people, parking is in like the top 10 of fears for people. They will literally go out of their way to not have to parallel park, to not have to pay, to, it's insane. And I think that's probably a younger generation too. I think that's going to grow more, but you don't think about that kind of stuff from your consumer's perspective of, you're thinking about the things that you're worried about. You know that you have to make sure that they have brought all the right things to closing, that they have, that they know when the closing is, that they know what they're financially obligated for, all of that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, they're worried about, like, what do I do when I actually get there? And so helping them see that and look at that data, I think helps a lot of the time, so that they can feel like, okay, this isn't, It's not a waste of time to do a TikTok where we literally show our parking lot. It's not a waste of time to do a video walkthrough of our closing room. And you could stretch that into any industry, not just real estate, but it could be, any service, any product, anything like that. The more that you can really break it down, it's usually the stuff that, especially when we're talking to owners, it's the things that we take for granted that we think is a waste of time that ultimately ends up performing the best because people are scared to ask things that they don't know, or they feel dumb, or they don't want to be the one in a comment section to be made fun of, or who knows what. And so the more that you can break it down and give them what they need, the you get way more success in getting them to buy into your business product or service much quicker.
So can I narrow in a little bit on what on just the message you said there? So you talked about, okay, so with the title company, number one thing is parking. Now, how often would you suggest to now put a message out about the parking? Is this something where, as you say, do a TikTok video and leave it, or is it something where, oh no, you want to do a TikTok video, now do a similar TikTok video about parking again a month later, and you want to keep repeating that similar thing?
For some of it is working it into your other processes. So you've probably got some sort of system that is automatically emailing them what they need to bring to the closing. So it's making sure that you incorporate this is where it turns into more integrated communications and not just marketing necessarily, not specifically. It's using your marketing tools in your communications. So as you're communicating with them about what they are coming to your office for, making sure that you're including those videos, those walkthroughs, those resources, talking about the frequently asked questions and that kind of stuff. I don't think that you have to do it just because it's the most Googled thing. It's not like you should be tweeting once a week that that is, or Xing or whatever we're calling it these days. You don't have to be posting about it once a week necessarily, but you have to figure out how to weave it into where your customers or consumers are getting the information from you already.
So let's talk about TikTok because this is something that I'm not well versed in. What is the demographic that's on there?
It's everybody, but no one all at the same time. That's what a lot of businesses feel like, I think. And I mean, the biggest growing demographic in the United States, at least, is certainly those under 30, that 18 to 30 range. And that's why TikTok for Business is booming in a lot of ways. I think a lot of people have the misconception that it's, if you only know of TikTok from the dance, you've got viral dance kind of videos and that sort of thing, then you think it's a waste of time. But there is a huge educational component side to TikTok. TikTok Shop is just a mammoth beast of e-commerce at this point for people that have products. They're running into their own growing pains for sure. But one of the most fascinating stats for me right now is that for people under 32 in the United States, TikTok has surpassed Google for daily search results. So when you think about what they're searching for
Wow.
on a daily basis, which blows my, I mean, I'm an elder millennial, and so I would not first go to TikTok to say, local auto mechanic or best restaurants near me would not be something that I open TikTok for. I'm too ingrained into the Google world. But this is why Google's making swift, crazy changes very quickly because they're trying to catch up and make sure that they Google's been king for a long time. But that's a whole other, I could get into a whole other thing on that. But it's something to watch because the fact that people are that, especially if that's your demographic, you have to be on there. I mean, if they're using it to search for the most mundane daily things, that's a place that you've got to be. And there are so many tools for it now. There are a lot of, we're doing a lot to try to break down the barriers. For example, yesterday we actually, one of our real estate customers, we called it a studio hours day, and we did a full 8 hours where people signed up for 20 minutes at a time, and we just showed them how to use TikTok Reels, CapCut, how to demystify it and make it easier for them to show, like, hey, in 15 minutes we're going to do at least three videos for you that you can use tomorrow, to try and make it much more approachable. Because like all things, if you don't know it and don't understand it, it's like this seems super daunting. And they don't realize that with all that same content we were just talking about, you can create stuff really easily on there.
Yeah, I would say that's one area that I lack in is understanding, well, a cutting up content, because We produce a show pretty much every week, and I don't don't have a lot of the time to sit through and edit out the great clips, but also don't understand the platforms necessarily which to upload. I used to know Facebook great. Facebook's now for, it's a retirement home. Instagram is for I guess more like Gen Xers like myself. I'm at the lower end of the, I think I'm the last year of Gen X, if I'm not mistaken. But then TikTok is just this whole other thing that I was reluctant to download until about a month ago, to be honest with you, because of the security concerns with it and all that jazz.
Yes.
What would you tell business owners like me?
On all pieces of what you just said, I'll touch on compliance security first. That's one question I get asked a lot. Should we be worried about this? And I tell people you have to worry about your own compliance security protocols and all that stuff in your organization, just like you would anything else. I don't think it's different than any other social media platform for what's possible there with security. So you have to figure out what is important for you in that regard. But outside of that, I tell a lot of business owners right now that I think that it's definitely not going away. I mean, it's Threads, for example, will never be as big as what TikTok is. Even with all the threats of government shutting it down and whatever else, I mean, it will go into a whole different world if it had to. And so I think that you've got to figure out what your strategy is, whether you're active on it today or in the next year or so. You've got to think about what you want that to be. And there are tools, like I mentioned CapCut, it's a really great app to be able to add clips of your show, of the podcast, and be able to edit it really quickly and use pre-existing templates to look like you know what you're doing and look like it's homemade. Because that's the other thing, you don't want to be too polished on there. So you're not sending it off to somebody else to be edited. And a lot of people worry about the type of content they're putting out and all of that. And I think, especially on TikTok, when you're getting started, you just have to start and you have to be consistent. And whatever that means for you, the algorithm for TikTok values one or more videos a day, but that's not possible for most businesses when they're starting. So whatever, if you can do one a week, that's great. One a month, whatever it takes for you to build the muscle to get started, that's what you should do. And you can figure out the rest of it from there. You can start to find your audience. You can look at what other people are doing. I mean, just on the educational side alone, there's a huge space there. The other thing people need to know about TikTok is something crazy, like almost 60% of TikToks get watched with no audio. So for the people that do video recordings and are all worried about how their voice sounds and what they're literally saying, I'm like, they're not listening. They don't hear it. They don't know that you flubbed a word. They don't know that you hate your nasally voice, all of that stuff. That's where the closed caption services are really important on TikTok to make sure that any words are showing. We do a lot of text-based videos for customers for TikTok that perform really well because, again, people aren't listening with sound necessarily. And so I think those are the hurdles that you have to kind of get over. The audio piece, a lot of people don't like the way they look. And I say all the time, we're all brave enough to leave the house every day. You have to think of this stuff as your digital doormat. And if it's not you on video, what are you gonna do? What are you gonna say? What are you gonna show? There's still lots of ways to do video, even if it's not you on screen talking to someone. And so start spending time thinking about that, I think is really important, especially if, like you were saying, like if Facebook has been your thing for a long time and you realize that now you're in the retirement community, as you said, Jeff, I think you've got to start thinking about a move and what that looks like. And it won't be overnight and it's not necessarily easy, but I think that's, for us, what we've seen is that's the best part about TikTok is it's a great place to throw spaghetti against the wall, proverbially, and figure out what's going to work for you and what's not.
You kind of answered the next question I was going to ask there, and really that's about distribution. Like, what's most important for somebody to distribute their content to first?
On TikTok specifically or in general?
In general.
I mean, I think you always need to be thinking about audience. That's important. I think on some of the platforms, thinking about hashtags. I mean, Instagram and TikTok, your hashtags are still currency on there. I mean, it's really important to make sure you're being seen by the right folks. I don't think that that's the case because you want to make sure there's some people that really spend a lot of time on hashtags and everything. And I'm like, you're yelling into an empty room. You've created this clever hashtag, but if nobody's following it, nobody's there, no one cares. And so that's a little bit of it for folks, but ultimately for me on the distribution side, it's definitely thinking about audience first, and then you can look at some of the data points. These days, I don't believe any of the data that I see. We saw earlier this year that the Facebook algorithm was rewarding video posts that were posted around 3 a.m., that was going to just be mammoth gains. And so we did that for a ton of customers. And I mean, nothing happened, not a single change in anything. So you have to take that kind of stuff with a grain of salt. There are all kinds of blogs all the time that are like, these are the best days of the week and times and all of that kind of stuff. You have to look at your own data for your own customers. And I also say a lot, ask them how they want to receive stuff, because you may be putting things out there thinking that because you've had a few customers tell you that they're active on these platforms, or that's what your data has shown in the past. How would they like to receive this information? We have one customer who's in the florist business, and weirdly, their folks said that they would rather just have quick audio updates on the sales that they were having, updates and things like that. They don't care about anything else. And so we started including audio clips in their monthly email, and people loved it, and it went much better for them. So you have to, that takes time, and for a lot of people, they're like, this is mind-numbing. I don't want to do that. And so I think, you know, find, especially if you're a small business trying to figure this stuff out, find the one thing that works for you and do it really well. You don't have to be everywhere. There's a stat that I share when I do a lot of presentations that adults in the United States are active monthly on at least seven social media platforms. Most people can't even name seven. And a lot of businesses then think, oh crap, do I need to be active on all of these? Does that mean I need a presence on each one? Definitely not. You know, out of the 80 average apps on our phone, they now say that 12 of them are streaming apps. That's also insane. You know, like there's only so much time that you can stream, only so much that you can stream. So you have to figure out what works for you, what makes sense for your product, your customers. And again, answering that question of, what are your ultimate goals? Who are you trying to communicate with, and why? And what does success look like? And that should help steer the rest of the ship for you.
You talked about lists earlier. And I, you know, this is kind of where we sidetracked the Dan Kennedy and the freedom of speech thing. I still think it's a great spot for freedom of speech because you own the list. If you have a subscribed list, people who have actually opted in, you have the ability to communicate with them on a regular basis in a way that you choose. They'll unsubscribe if they don't like it. Which don't be afraid of that. That's not personal. What's a good size for a business to have of a communications list, we'll call it.
Oh, you're asking the tough questions
He's
now.
gonna hold you to that number too, so
Right? I would say, so I want to say one thing really quick about what you just said. People should not be scared of unsubscribes. That's actually the best thing for your list. You don't want people that don't care, the apathetic people, you don't want them. So don't let your owner or supervisor, whomever, be worried about the unsubscribes. That's probably the best number that you can have on your list. But that's an aside. List size, it blew my mind. I mean, we really, our company blew up during the pandemic, and I know a lot of companies really struggled, but we got really lucky because a lot of people saw the need for marketing during the pandemic. And it blew my mind how many were, when I would say, like, can we have your customer list? And it didn't exist. They just had no idea. Restaurants, I mean, literally any industry, there were so many that came to us and said, well, we don't have that. I mean, even in real estate, and I would be like, well, don't you have this software or that software? And they would say, well, yeah. And I'm like, well, we can pull a customer list from that. But there are some that just don't capture that information. And so you have to start capturing it, number one. Number two, the list size, I mean, it really depends on your business and where you're at. I don't know. I think that for most companies, I think you probably are aiming for a list of at least 1,000 or so, that's really what you're going to want to be able to have any sort of measurable, you know, information on what's working, what's not working. That's going to be super small for some. For some, they're going to hear that and be like, I haven't interacted with 1,000 people in the last 3 years. So take it with a grain of salt, but For me, that also goes into, I feel like a lot of people, when they start worrying about their lists and whether they're on the envelope analogy, whether you're sending that kind of mail or email or anything else, they worry about A/B testing and all of that people talk about. And for me, unless you have a really sizable list of probably 10,000 or more, it's not worth your time on the A/B testing kind of stuff. You're gonna see what's working and what's not working as you go along, and worrying about if you are already having a hard time sending out one distribution a month of something, then worrying about like trying to differentiate it on different audiences and all that kind of stuff is only gonna drag you down more. But I know I got away from your original question of list size, but I guess if I had to, I want to give you a real answer, so I guess I'm going to stay with the thousand-ish. But again, there are a lot of asterisks on that for who that would be for and why.
So you kind of touched on this already, but how do you go about building a list if you haven't had one already?
So there are a lot of different ways. Organically, you need to be asking people to join your list at all times. I mean, just in every way possible. If you have a storefront, a lot of people make sure that at the point of purchase or whatever, that that's where they ask people to join their list. There are some industries that don't allow incentives for joining lists, you know, depending on where you're at in financial services, and otherwise you may not be able to do this. But if you're able to offer some sort of incentive, that's why, you know, it's people will give you 10% off for joining their subscription list or something like that, depending on what your product or service is. But you've got to be constantly asking, and it's got to be part of your, I always say it's got to be part of your culture overall. Like, everybody on the team is responsible for building the list. It's not the one marketing person or the salesperson or the owner. Anybody that you come into contact with, you should be building into your list. And whether that's, we could have a whole other conversation on CRMs and all that kind of thing, but being really purposeful in signing people up. But then don't just sign them up if you're not going to send them anything, because I think that's a nail in the coffin for you too. But, and then on the, so that's organically, just be asking all the time, social media, the emails you already send out, putting it on your videos that you're doing, events that you're going to in person, all of that kind of stuff. But a lot of people ask questions about buying or leasing lists. And it's a weird, dark world for buying and leasing lists.
Sorry, I've made that mistake, so I have my own opinions on
Yeah,
it.
so we, anybody that does their homework on us will immediately see that we launched a company last year that helps with lease lists. But we do it in a very different way. So a lot of lists, when you buy or lease, you can buy a bulk list. You can say, I want to go after this audience or this type of customer, and somebody will give, you know, for $1,000, they'll give you a list of, I don't know, 5,000 names, 10,000 names, depends on who you buy it from. And most of the time, those lists are trash, and you send it out and you'll get flagged for emails that they didn't sign up for. They will complain, and you'll get in trouble with CAN Spam Act laws and all that kind of stuff. So we try to do it a little differently, where we partnered with a data organization, and we only do lease. List leasings where they have to send emails through us, so they can't do anything really ridiculous in that way that it's going to get anybody in trouble. And we only send 500-ish emails at a time. So instead of very, even if you bought a list, let's say there's somebody listening today that is sitting there with a list of 10,000 people they just purchased, do not send all 10,000 an email all at once. You will be shut down. You will be flagged. It will be a waste of your money immediately. I would try much smaller pockets to see if you can get away with it. But you've got to use a responsible list maker, look at reviews and stuff like that to make sure what you're buying is clean and as real as possible. Otherwise, you're gonna have a headache like it sounds like you had, Jeff.
What's the difference between a purchase and a lease list? Just to understand that portion
A
distinction.
lot of them charge more to purchase it outright, where you can purchase the full list outright, and then you get all the email addresses and everything. For us, when we lease a list, we don't give you the list of customers. We will send the email. We will make sure that they match all of your demographics and everything, and we'll send a test email. And then anyone that interacts with that, if they open the email, they click on something, they make a purchase, anything like that, they become your customer, then you get that list. So you don't get the full, you could lease a list of 5,000 from me, But at the end of the month, we may only send you 200 that interacted with your email, and then you get those folks to do whatever else you want to in the future. But it's usually a little more affordable for people to lease a list.
And also, I guess it's coming from yourself who owns the list. So it comes actually with your messaging. So they're kind of expecting the message and higher chance of opening it.
Right. And it keeps it cleaner, and it keeps it so where, any of our customers are a little safer in what they're doing in that way, because it's not as diluted, and knock on wood, they're not being reported as nearly as often.
All right, so
And
one
would
more
you have
question with oh, sir, go ahead, JT.
I was just going to say, would you have lists all over the place? If someone says, hey, I want to get in Oregon, for instance, I'm looking for this. Would you have lists all over the place? Or is it something that you'd have to, may not have a list in an area?
That's a great question. And if somebody immediately answers that question, you should always give yourself pause. What I always say is, let me look. So tell me what you're looking for, and I will go in the system and I will tell you exactly what it says. Because if I don't have those people, we're not going to enter into an agreement. That's where a lot of these list purchases, they're just throwing in Gmail addresses and stuff to say, yes, you wanted 10,000 technically. You wanted 10,000 in Ohio. Some of these say they're in Eastern Indiana, so we're going to go ahead and just scoot them in to get them to their 10,000, and stuff like that happens a lot. So we go into the system and we say, like, look, it's pulling up 50,000. So we'll say, your initial lease should be 2,000 names, and we'll start there.
How about if someone's never communicated with their list, but they have one, or it's a dead list, nobody's actually interacting with the content? What should a business owner be doing there?
I think if they've never interacted with their list before, they have to figure out a reason to start communicating. I think it's important to be like, I've never heard from them in this way. Why am I getting this? So it shouldn't be, most of the time, it shouldn't be salesy up front. I think that's the easiest way to have your list immediately start to fall apart in terms of engagement and everything. So some sort of helpful content to whatever that customer base is, whether it's previous customers or current customers or whatever that is, something that's going to help them in another piece of their business, their life, whatever that is, being more helpful than salesy thought leadership, whatever that looks like, I think is always good. Another really soft one is usually a call to follow them on social in some way. Like, hey, we recently launched on TikTok. We'd love for you to follow us. That's a good, like, soft first couple of communications for them. The dead list, we find the most success, and I think in general, people find the most success with being super honest to saying, like, this obviously isn't working. If you don't reply to this email, click, if you don't do something with this, you're never going to hear from us again. And it blows my mind. We have people that I will email almost daily, prospects and stuff. And when we send that email, they respond. They're like, no, don't give up on me yet. Don't get rid of me. It'll clean up a lot of your list still. A lot of them may disappear and not do anything. But again, that's ultimately what you want. You don't want people on there that are weighing you down. But sending something that says this isn't working out, you obviously don't care about. You can be as stern, serious. There, HubSpot has a lot of good. There's a blog on HubSpot about breakup emails, breaking up with lists that you can use. That has a lot of good examples that some are. Use GIFs of people like waving goodbye and whatever, but there are some that are more stern that are like, this obviously you don't care what we're saying, so we're gonna end this email relationship. And people reply. It blows my mind, but they do.
What is a good open rate for an email list like that?
For a in general, the average email open rate these days is anywhere from, depending on your industry, anywhere from 11 to probably 16%. So that's a 5% spread for sure. But if it's your own owned email list, you should be looking at more like that 16 to 20% is what you should be trying to plan for. And then most click-through rates, which is people get that confused. Most people that are clicking on some link in your email is usually only 1 to 5%. And so depending on, again, your list and your customer base, you may want that to be a little higher, but if you're looking at prospects or people that have never emailed you before, it's probably going to be closer to that 1 to 2%. And if you get that, that's still successful. I mean, that's way higher than what a lot of people get. What wins the most on the email game is definitely consistency. That's when you start to see those numbers shift and grow. You can't send one email and hope that it works. That's not happening for most people.
You know what? I have to flex here just a little bit. We're 40 to 45%
That's
open
great.
rate. Yeah, and we're
Good.
sitting
Good for
between
you.
that
You're doing
1
the
to
right
2%.
things then.
Thanks.
Doing the right things then.
That's one of those little things that it's like, wow, there's an accomplishment. Yay. So, Wayne, we're at the end of our hour. I want to be respectful of your time and the time of our listeners. Is there anything you want to leave our audience with as we close out here?
I think I just that the whole conversation on differentiation and really trying to think about what makes you unique as a company, because there is something, whether you've been around for 100 years or 100 days, figuring out what makes you unique. And then, like I said, when we were talking about how to thread that needle for success this year, don't it can be daunting in your marketing to think too big too fast. And so where can you get those wins? Who are the people that will make a difference in your bottom line this year? And how do you find success with those people? Because that can really narrow your focus and make more sense of your budget, your time, and everything else. And hopefully that gives a little more clarity to folks and makes it all less alchemy, like you were saying at the very beginning of this whole thing.
Who are you looking for, and how do folks find you?
We love working with small businesses of any shape and size. So if there's something we talked about today that would be helpful to you, I'd love to talk. I also just love to brainstorm. I love to think differently about people's brands and stuff and what they're maybe going through. And so you can reach out to me with my email, wayne@bowdigital.com. And also our website is bowdigital.com, which has all of our socials and everything else linked there where you can follow and interact. And I'd love to talk more with anybody that's interested.
And just to clarify, it's
Fantastic.
Bowe.
Yes, I was going to say that next,
Yes. Thank you.
JT. Nice catch. Wayne, thank you so much. This has been awesome for me. I love talking marketing. I love exchanging ideas and thoughts and creativity. This has been fantastic. Thank you so much for that. JT, thank you for your time. Thank you for listening. If you've made it all the way through this, please do us a favor. Like, share, subscribe. All of those things really help us get the message out there. Oh, and of course, comment, because comments are fun. And if you want to know more about what Jonathan does, you can certainly go to amortgageplan.com or go to guidetothegrind.com to find out more about both of us. Anyhow, thank you, Wayne. Thank you,
Thank you,
Jonathan.
Ernest.
Thank you for listening. Have a fantastic day, and we'll see you soon.